It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome back to Money for Lunch. This is such a crucial time of the year, right? It's, you know, if you believe H&R Block, it's refund season. For most of us, it's just, it's time to pay the IRS. And on the show today, we have Mary King. Mary King is the IRS problem-solving attorney. She's a regular contributor here on Money for Lunch. And if you guys caught our last show, she's also a lot of fun. We just had a blast talking about taxes. I don't think two people had that much fun ever talking about the IRS. But either way, Mary King, IRS problem-solving attorney, co-author of the best-selling book, Protect and Defend. Mary's career as an attorney began in 1993 after graduating from Stetson University College of Law. Her career in law has primarily focused in IRS problem solving as well as mortgage foreclosure defense. Mary has been practicing law for 19 years and enjoys helping her clients remove the dark cloud of the IRS. Mary King, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here as always.
Absolutely. All right, so let's talk about this. What happens if I can't file my taxes on time?
Well, good question. Today, of course, is the deadline. And if you can't file, you need to at least file an extension. And the reason for that is it will prevent you from getting the late filing penalties as long as you file, of course, by October 15th. So, it will only protect you from the late filing penalties. Keep in mind that is an extension to file, not an extension to pay.
So. Very important clarification, right? They don't. You can file whenever you want, but you got to pay us now, is what the IRS is saying. So, absolutely, I want you guys to understand this. So, by filing an extension, then you have until October to pay. However, no, you have until October to file, but
right.
This is not an extension to pay. You have to pay whatever you think you owe now.
Absolutely. And like you said, it's a very crucial distinction. A lot of people don't understand that or maybe don't even know it. So
yes.
Really important.
Yes. I was not aware of that clarification until about 10 years ago when it was thoroughly explained to me, and it is an eye-opener, let me tell you. All right, so let's talk about this. What are the documents that I need to keep?
Well, after you file your return, you really need to keep your income and expense or deduction information in the event, of course, that you're audited. And generally, you want to keep that 7 years. However, keep in mind that although the IRS can only audit you for 3 years, if they believe that there is tax evasion or tax fraud or anything like that, they can audit you indefinitely.
Wow, there's a nice little twist. So if you're ripping off the IRS, keep those documents so you may need them longer. Or better yet, if the IRS thinks there's some hanky-panky there, they may audit you 5, 6, 10 years, whenever they want, right? That's what you're saying.
Correct. Right.
Yeah.
Now, there are some documents, though, that you need to keep forever. Stock acquisition data, stock and mutual fund statements, real estate property purchase and improvement records.
So tax, investment type data, and then real estate type data.
Exactly.
Gotcha. All right. Okay, so I should have asked you this first, but so let's say that I filed my extension. Now I owe the IRS taxes. What do I do if I owe the IRS taxes?
Well, there are a number of ways that you can resolve that. The first one, of course, is just paying what you owe, and most people can't do that. So the other things that you can do going into what's called currently non-collectible, meaning that you just can't afford to pay. The problem with currently non-collectible is that the penalties and interest continue to run as long as you're in that status. So even though you're not paying the IRS anything, they are still assessing against you.
All right, say that again. So even though you're in this uncollectible status, they're still assessing against you, is that what you said?
They're still assessing penalties and interest. So let's say that when you go into currently non-collectible, you owe, for easy numbers, $500. You stay in currently non-collectible for 2 years. So at the end of that 2 years, you owe $550.
Gotcha. Yes. Fun time. All right. So just because you're uncollectible doesn't mean that you're unassessable.
Right. So the other ways that you can resolve IRS issues is with a monthly payment agreement. So for instance, again, let's use easy numbers. You owe the IRS $1,000. And you go into an agreement whereby you pay them, let's say, $100 a month. And that will go on until the debt is paid in full.
And that way you avoid the penalties and further interest. Well, I guess you're still probably being charged an interest on that payment plan, but at least you avoid the penalties.
The penalties for late payment continue to accrue as well as the interest.
Even on a payment plan?
Even on a payment plan.
Wow, what a deal.
Right. And then keep in mind, I mean, I used a fairly easy example, but the IRS can only collect for 10 years from the date of assessment. So even though I said it would go on until it's full paid, depending on the circumstances, it will go on either till it's full paid if that's under the 10-year statute or 10 years, whichever, you know, is applicable.
Gotcha. All right, so let me ask you this. How much power does the IRS have? For example, can the IRS revoke your passport?
Absolutely. Did you hear about the new highway funding bill that was passed in December of last year?
Yes.
Okay. Buried deep inside there was a provision that if you owe the IRS $50,000 or more and they have issued and recorded a lien against you, you can have your passport revoked or they can refuse to deny it or to they can refuse to renew it.
Wow.
It gets better. So you may think that you can just write to the IRS and say, "Hey, you know, I didn't really mean to owe this money. I've already got a Mediterranean cruise scheduled. I really need my passport. You think you can, you know, renew it?" And unfortunately, the only remedy out there to get this reversed is to file in tax court.
Wow. There's some more fun time ahead. Mediterranean
right.
vacation or tax court. So let me clarify this. So let's say that my passport was revoked.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this Mediterranean cruise coming up. Do I have to file once I file that in tax court, can I then get my passport reinstated, or is that something that the judge has to sign off on now?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question, and I don't know the answer to that. I would suspect that you're going to have a judge order that the passport can be renewed.
Yeah, I imagine that. That's what I was thinking. You'd have to file some kind of motion, and the judges has to look at it and say, yay or nay. Wow. You know, it's amazing to me how much power these guys have and continue to have, and kind of a sneaky way of getting more power is they hide it in this highway bill. You know, for the most part, though, I want to say this. The IRS are doing the best that they can. These are humans doing the best that they can. Sometimes you get a human who is, I'll just say, a big fat jerk. There's no other way around it. You know, I mean, he or she no longer enjoys their job. They hate life. They, you know, and so sometimes they take it out on taxpayers. I want to say the majority of the IRS people I've ever met with seem to be pretty decent folks, but every now and then you do get a soured pickle, don't you?
You're absolutely correct. And, you know, usually, like you said, you can get along with them, you can work with them, but occasionally there are some IRS agents who are just really incredibly difficult, even for me, to work with.
Now, when you have
sometimes
somebody...
you have to take other actions.
I was going to ask you, so you're dealing with somebody, let's say you're dealing with a big old jerk, can you request a new agent be assigned to the case?
Generally, what I have done in the past is request that I speak with their manager, and sometimes that does the trick, and sometimes you have to take additional actions.
Yes, additional action. Fun time. All right, IRS. Today is the 18th. When we're doing the show, and today is literally your last day to file on time. You can still file an extension. And, of course, you know, consult with your IRS professional with that. If you have questions about the money you owe, about a tax lien, about letters that you've gotten from the IRS, I'm going to urge you to reach out to Mary King, the tax lawyer in Florida, taxlawyerflorida.com, taxlawyerflorida.com. She can help you answer your questions. And maybe give you some ideas what you need to do. Mary King, always good to have you on the show. Looking forward to having you back again soon.
Well, thank you so much.
You bet. Good stuff there from Mary King, the IRS problem-solving attorney. She is the lady who handles my specific IRS problems. And most of them, I have to admit, are self-inflicted. I screw up here. I screw up there. I bring it to her. She fixes it. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. Shannon Hernandez, my next guest. Shannon Hernandez is the founder of The Writing Whisperer. Her mission is to help business owners and authors become thought leaders through the use of strategic content, so they can positively impact more people. The Writing Whisperer was named one of the top 100 websites for writers by The Write Life in both 2014 and 2015. Shannon continues to inspire others as a content strategist and copywriter through her blog, speaking engagements, and podcast appearances. You can find out more about her at thewritingwhisperer.com. Shannon, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
All right, I love the name, The Writing Whisperer. How did that name come about?
Well, you know, when I launched 3 years ago, and I was just looking for clever things online. There was a horse whisperer and a dog whisperer and another kind of whisperer, but I'm not sure I can say it here. So I... anyway, there was no Writing Whisperer, so I snagged it, and I spent a lot of time defending that name, to be honest.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah, I think it's a great title. It's easy to remember, so it's great. It's what you want, especially for marketing purposes or copywriting purposes. You want something that's easy and memorable.
Yes. Yes, you do.
All right. So let's talk about this. How do you go about helping business owners and authors become thought leaders?
Well, it all starts with a central question that I've been asking brands for the past few years across the country. And it's a simple question, but it's one that requires a lot of thought. And that question is, what do you want to be known for in your business?
Mm.
And, you know, I know that you interview a lot of people, and we work with lots of different kinds of people, but it doesn't matter. When I sit down with a life coach or a health coach or an author, the first question I ask them is, what do you want to be known for in your business? And surprisingly, many of them have not really thought that deeply about that question. They know they want to help people get healthier. They know they want to help people get on the right track. But if you're really going to stand out from what everyone else is doing, you have to kind of know the answer to this question.
Yes, it's amazing. Absolutely. How many people don't know that? I remember when I started consulting many, many years ago, I struggled with that exact question. It's sometimes you think it's easy to answer, but then when you start really trying to nail it down, it becomes more of a challenge than people think. And identifying your audience helps sometimes, or at least it helped me identify what I wanted to be known for.
Right. Yeah, and it helps you also get focused, right? So that you know
yes.
you have a plan every day and you're not just scrambling around trying to figure the next thing out.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. So, okay, so let me ask you this. When it comes to what do you want to be known for in your business, how, you know, what are some of the ways that people can answer that question?
Well, this is essential. It's,
hold on a second, Shannon. Hold on a second. We're having some, you're cutting in and out. So bear with, let's see. Hold on. Let's go ahead. Start over again with that answer.
Okay. So many ways you can answer. You can answer it in the process of how you work with people. That could be your differentiator of what you want to be known for in your business. And I can give an example of that in just a minute. And it could also be your body of knowledge or your content. And those are the two main things that really help people stand out is either how they work with others or their body of knowledge. So as an example, people always, you know, when they call me for copywriting or ghost blogging services, one of the things they always say is, well, what is different about what you do than what somebody else does that's charging less, which is a question I love. I love answering that question. And my answer is when you retain me for, you know, ghost blogging, we get on the phone every month and we develop content.
Hold on, Shannon, you cut out. Okay, so when you answer that, say that again. How do you answer that when somebody says, how are you different?
How am I different?
This is really frustrating. Hold on one second, Shannon. We're going to try something. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to see if we can straighten out our technical issue. Bear with me, everybody. We're going to be right back right after this.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase Mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it? Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
we are back. Had some technical difficulties there. Shannon called back. So we are talking with Shannon Hernandez, the writing whisperer. And when you left off, you were explaining, first of all, that you love getting that question. What makes you different than somebody else that might be charging less? And your answer is?
My answer is that you're going to get personal attention on the phone with a content strategy every single month. So you're not going to get a set of questions emailed to you about your blog content or your copywriting content. I'm literally going to get on the phone with you every month. We're going to strategize, and we're going to make sure that I capture your voice in the writing for your business.
I love that. And so, first of all, I want to kind of review this. When Shannon is asked, you know, what makes her different, especially for, you know, comparing her to somebody that might charge cheaper, you know, she doesn't back down from that. She gets excited about it. She loves to answer that question. Why does she love to answer that question? Because she is prepared. She's thought about it. She knows what her body of work is. She knows the level of service she's going to deliver. What makes her different? So I love this attitude, Shannon. That's great. So I hope everybody picks up on that. All right. I love that. And so she delivers an overwhelming, great personal experience, very much to, you know, somebody like Zappos. That's what they were famous for. Not cheap shoes, crazy over-the-top service.
Yes, exactly.
I love it. I love it. All right. So let's talk about this. So how can individuals begin branding themselves as a thought leader? Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, it comes down to what I have identified as kind of six key questions. And
okay.
These questions are not, you don't have to answer them all, right? You don't need answers for all six, but you should be able to answer four of the six. And if you can't answer them right away, it's completely okay. This takes a little time, and you really should put some thought behind it, right? And draft out your ideas on paper.
Great. So let's review these six questions.
Yeah. So the first question is, what am I trying to change? And I think that's really huge today because, a personal value I have, and probably many of your listeners have too, is why are we getting up every morning to do what we do? There must be a driving force there. So what are we trying to change in our industry?
Love it. I love that. Yes. Why are you getting up in the morning? I love that. Go ahead. Next question.
The second question is, what does the change look like? So it's not enough to say, okay, well, I'm trying to change the world of copywriting, but maybe it's, what does this change look like? It's going to be personalized service. It's going to be you and me building a really great relationship. So those are the two questions that really have to do with the change you're trying to make.
I love that. And what I like about that is that it really gets you focused on not only, you know, the change that you're trying to bring, but what does it look like? Because to say something like, hey, I want to help people improve their copywriting, that's too vague. Or I want to help people lose weight or get healthier, it's still too vague. What does that really look like? I love that. I love that. Great focus questions. Okay, next question.
What do people say when they talk about me? And when I work with my clients, it actually goes like this. What do people say when they talk about me and I'm not in the room?
Yes.
And this is what I refer to as your personal brand, right? It's your qualities, your values. What do people say about you when you're not around? And this is a huge question. And if you're not sure what they say about you, you can email a few people and you can say, hey, when you hear my name, what comes to your mind first? And they will tell you, and you ask them to be honest, and they will tell you. And so this is a really key question about really values, what I call personal values and the standards that you live by.
Yes, I love that. I love that. You know, because some people may say, hey, you know, Bert's a funny guy, or, you know, Bert shows up late, or, you know, whatever they're saying about you when you're not there, that is your brand, or as you said, your personal brand, and that can affect your business both in a positive and negative way.
That's right. And the next question that kind of piggybacks off this one is something that I speak about every time I speak, and it's what do I stand for? And not just what do I stand for in business, but what do I stand for in life? And I just went through a huge rebrand, and this is such a central value, central core values to the work that I'm doing, that this is actually on my homepage at the very bottom. It says values matter, and you can click through there, and there are values that I live by, and then values and business principles. And so people know exactly what they're going to get before they call me.
I love that. I love that. You know, this is such a great thing because it's going to attract the right people and repel the wrong people because they know what you stand for.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think that's such a powerful tool, and it dovetails into everything else. You know, what am I trying to change? What does that change look for? What do people do? You know, what do people say when they talk about me? What do I stand for? That all tails. I mean, that all at, you know, comes back to answer, what do I stand for? All right, what's the next question?
So the fifth question is, what meaningful contribution am I making in my field or industry? And I think this is huge because, you know, when I started my business and knew I wanted to be a copywriter and a content strategist, I also knew there were lots of other people doing that. But I wanted to make a meaningful contribution. And so I've done some things. I've offered free master classes once a month that people can hop on and learn how to better organize their content or how to, you know, write better copy for their own businesses if they're not ready to hire a copywriter or they just need to brush up on something like sales pages. I also host, you know, there's Facebook. I'm very active on Facebook, and I'm chiming in and helping people in groups when they ask. So the meaningful contribution, I think, is the thing that's bigger than yourself. So how are you contributing in a meaningful way to the industry as a whole?
Yes, I love that. I think that's such a fantastic, fantastic question. What meaningful contribution am I making in my field or industry? I love that. All right, final question, number six.
Number six, if I stopped the work I am doing today, would anyone miss it? And this question is a gut check. And when I really started thinking about this question, it really helped me reframe a lot of the services I was offering, because actually, if I go away, I hope that I don't, but if I went away, I hope that somebody would say, man, I really miss those classes that Shannon gives free every single month, or I really enjoyed the experience when I came to New York City to work with Shannon on my content strategy. So it's a key question, but it's also, I think, the biggie and the gut check.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's one of those legacy questions, right? I mean, that's a question that's great to ask, not only about your business, but about, you know, yourself in general. I mean, if you were to be gone tomorrow, would anybody in the business world miss you? Would your family miss you? And, you know, and it doesn't have to be that dire. Maybe you retire. Maybe you're thinking about retiring, and is anybody going to miss you when you retire? So that's a great question. It is a real gut check of a question.
Yeah. So these are the six questions that really frame the work I do with people who want to become the thought leaders in their industry. And, you know, thought leader sometimes scares people. I think we should just talk about that for 1 minute, because when you put yourself out there, as we all know, you open yourself to criticism. However, you also open yourself to lots of powerful, awesome opportunities that you would have never otherwise been able to achieve or to get. So it is a little scary for some people to think of themselves as thought leaders, but it is attainable for anyone who really wants to stand out from what everyone else is doing.
Yes, and I think it was Mahatma Gandhi who talked about that. He says, first they criticize you, then they ignore you, then you win.
Yes, it's so true.
and think about it like this, guys. If you quit after the first, you know, after the first wave of criticism, then they do win, and you didn't believe in yourself enough or in the change that you're trying to accomplish. But if you stick it out through the criticism and then through, you know, whenever they start ignoring you, eventually you will win. Eventually the people who are criticizing will shut up and go away, and you start building that fan base. And let me tell you, there's nothing more fun. I've seen this happen on Facebook multiple times. When you're dealing with somebody who is followed and really appreciated, and then somebody starts criticizing them on Facebook, all of a sudden their fans start to rally around that brand or that individual, and they start beating up on that criticizer, and they set them straight. And it's a lot of fun to watch. And that is when you know that you are really a thought leader who has a fan base, who's starting to make a change, who would be missed if all of a sudden they were gone.
It's so true. And Bert, I also think that, when I became an author of my first book, this is where this really slapped me in the face.
Yes.
And as you know, they say, don't read your reviews on Amazon, but I did it anyway. And I learned rather quickly that there were, for every one bad comment, probably the person didn't even read the book, there was like 100 good comments in support of it. So you really do learn about yourself and what you stand for and how committed you are to the content behind your brand when you go out on a limb and you really do something that sets you apart from the crowd.
Yes. No, I totally love that. That is absolutely dead on. Nothing like writing a book and getting all that feedback from from Amazon. Been there, and it's definitely a gut check as well. Shannon, we're out of time. Looking forward to have you back again. It's been an absolute blast having you on the show today.
Thank you so much, Bert.
All righty, good stuff there from Shannon Hernandez, the Writing Whisperer. Whisper.com, yeah. WritingWhisperer.com. I love that title. It's great. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it? Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All righty, folks. We are back. I kid you not, this is going to be so much fun. My next guest, Stacy Isabella Turk. Stacy Isabella Turk, award-winning author and publisher of Volume 1, Through the Ribbon Ahead, certified trained coach, member of the ICF. She focused on conscious parenting and also works with entrepreneurs and welcomes opportunities to train corporate leaders using this content to shape company culture. She's a creator of MC Anthology Workshops, goes into schools, into workshops, to workshop students. This is kindergartners through fourth grade, as well as the parents and educational workshops. Let me try that again. Also parenting and educational workshops using the MC content formula. She is entrepreneur and business owner, Ribbonhead Media and Publishing. Stacy Isabella Turk, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's talk about MC. MC standing for Macaroni and Cheese Anthology. What the heck is Macaroni and Cheese Anthology?
Macaroni and Cheese Anthology is a series of 6 volumes of stories, songs, and activities, all based on character-building concepts. So I put together, it's a rather ambitious project, it's a lot of content, and I didn't want to just stop with the actual volumes, of which I published Volume 1 a few years ago. Volume 1 is the only one that's in print right now. I created workshops to start going into schools and working directly with the students and also parents. So I've workshopped over 2,000 kids myself. A few hundred parents as well, and all of the activities and the workshops are all based on this content. So we cover in Volume 1, there are 3 stories: Sabrina and Her Committee, which is about a little girl who's got a committee of negative voices that yak at her all the time, and she has to find a way to silence them so she can hear the one in her heart. Mediocrity, which is 13 rules for identifying the aliens that are visiting us from the planet Adequate in the universe Mediocre. Probably know some of those people yourself. And yes. And Grumpy, Grouchy, and Grateful, which is a story of three brothers that are caterpillars. And while they do the same thing every day, they experience life very differently based on their degree of gratitude. So volume one covers, you know, how to cultivate gratitude, self-esteem, and really how to be your best in the world when the world might not be its best.
I love it. I love it. You know, and it's so interesting, this whole thing about experiencing the same thing or doing the same thing but having a different experience based on gratitude. That is such a significant strategy. And I think that it's just not as relevant as it should be in our school system, in the workplace, in general.
It's true, and I know that it's become a very popular topic in the last, I would say, year or two, and I'm really excited to see how much attention has been placed on gratitude lately. I live in Southern California, so I'm not really sure how popular or prevalent of a theme it's becoming everywhere else, but I can tell you that in my community, it's become a very hot topic, and I'm excited. Not, you know, it's interesting because when I go in to work with kids, whether they're kindergarten, first, second, third, or fourth grade, it's always fascinating to me to hear what they have to say about gratitude. Because following the live reading in my workshop, I always have an interactive discussion: what is gratitude? Where do we feel it in our bodies? Where does it look like in our lives? And so it's interesting to me to hear what they have to say. Some of them don't even know what the word means. Some of them will associate it with joy or happiness, or they'll say it means being nice. But I think that if we can crystallize it and make it a visceral, joyful experience for them and create a practice in their life, then not only do we have a chance of helping to create adults with character, but it literally will change their brain. I've become quite fascinated with studying the neuroscience of behavior and neuroplasticity of the brain. And there are some studies. I even posted a few articles on the Facebook page, the Macaroni and Cheese Anthology Facebook page this morning about it to reflect our conversation, because I knew we were going to talk a little bit about gratitude. And there are scientific studies that show areas of the brain lighting up in people who actually engage in gratitude practice versus those who don't. So one of the things I've done with Macaroni and Cheese is I've created, that's one of the workshops, and it involves art. So the kids are creating a piece of art and they're developing a practice. I'm certainly not the first person to ever come up with the idea of doing a gratitude journal. I've just made it an artistic experience for them that they can also interact with their parents about. So it becomes a conversation. It's not something that just ends when my workshop ends. It's something that continues in their classroom, and it's something that continues in their home if the parents, you know, actually take advantage of using it as an anchor point and a place from which to pivot in their conversation and in their daily life with their child.
Yeah, no, I think this is so important, and you've made it, you know, fun. And I love the fact that you're starting with, you know, kindergartners all the way through fourth grade, because it's such a, you know, fundamental time for their brains. And to, you know, if everybody could imagine tens of thousands of children, maybe even a million children, learning on how to be more grateful and how to, shape their own experience, you know, that really changes the world.
It really does. And it's, you know, I know that it can sound very woo-woo, and I say to parents all the time, you know, there is scientific evidence of how if you continue this and you really treat it as if it's a muscle that you are building, the muscle will grow and it becomes active all on its own. It's not something that you just need to give lip service to. It's something that, you know, if you can create a visceral experience where that child gets imprinted with a joyful, right, dopamine is released, right? Dopamine actually is created in the brain when they have a joyful experience. That's something that the nervous system will want to recreate. So they're going to continue to look for things if you help them develop a practice. There's a psychologist named Carol Dweck, who I read a lot of her stuff and listen to a lot of her lectures, and she talks about the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. And the studies that were done on both children and adults who believe that if they fail at something, they failed, period, versus the other study group who believes that they just haven't achieved it yet. She has an entire lecture she does just on the word yet. And what's the difference in the brain activity in the people who believe in the finality versus the not-yetters? And there's actual, I mean, you can see the brain firing differently. The scans are quite different. So, you know, she talks about how the neurons are more dense in growth mindset people, and there are more connections. So that's what, you know, you want to foster. And if you can foster with something as simple, you know, as a gratitude journal that you're going to encourage your child to do every day, and you can make it an artistic experience on top of it, then you get to activate even those parts of the brain, you know, that fire with art. So
yeah,
it's win-win all the way around. It's a way to kind of activate. But at its core, macaroni and cheese really is a literacy tool. You know, I was a literacy volunteer for many years, and I can see the difference in the children who I have conversations with that are read to every night versus the children who are not. The ones who have books in their home versus the ones that don't. So I became very passionate about, you know, trying to create something that was going to activate the kids and really make them want to read, but also would be a book that the parents would want to pick up because the artwork was so delicious and there's all this fabulous music, you know, that's not typical kids' music. And I've tried to pepper it with vocabulary that will evoke conversation between parents and children. And maybe even give the parents ideas for activities, you know, mesmerized and collaborate, commiserate, vast, mediocre, grateful. You know, there's so many vocabulary words in this collection that I think parents aren't really expecting, but will support, or teachers, you know, it will support them in creating activities and lessons and just, you know, play activities.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that that I really enjoyed is that not-yetter type of, what do you call it, not-yetter, a title. I really enjoyed that, and what a difference that makes. The other thing I want to comment on is this woo-woo. I think our society has somehow vilified woo-woo. We know, and if you don't know this, it's real easy to Google this, but if you do not hug a child, the child ceases to grow. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what it's called, but children need to be hugged on a regular basis. You can't get much more woo-woo than a hug. But if a hug has such a huge effect on society, woo-woo is not, I don't know, like I said, they vilified it to the point that we shouldn't mention it. But, you know, look, the reality is all of us will achieve more with woo-woo than we will with, you know, algebra or, you know, whatever you want to, you know, what do you call it, with the science, the hard data kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Most of us need the woo-woo before we can really develop the other skills that are necessary.
Wouldn't it be great if we could feed that, if we could feed the masses with an understanding that they could have both? That literally more myelin is created in the brain when in a person who has gratitude, right? Then you really address the woo-woo and you address the scientist all at the same time.
Absolutely. You know, Mr. Spock from Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, he had pretty good parents, and they gave him a lot of woo-woo even though he was so, quote, logical. So anyway, enough of that. I just thought, you know, I think that we make, I think, too big of a deal of trying to avoid this woo-woo stuff, but it's so important. Mm-hmm. Gratitude
is
important.
It's absolutely.
You know, allowing your children or your people to feel loved and appreciated, you know, that's really what most religions are built on, and it's so vitally important. So,
right.
You know, I think it's great. And like I said before, it's so fantastic that you're doing it you know, from kindergarten up to the fourth grade. You're getting the parents involved. I like the fact that you're even though you're right, you're doing this gratitude journal, but you're making it this artistic adventure, which gets everybody involved.
Gets everybody involved, and it gives the child an opportunity to hear, to interact with the parent. You know, maybe they even do something together. You know, they decorate a page together. Or maybe the thing that the child is grateful for at the end of that day is something that they did with the parent. And it's another point at which they can connect. You know, parenting is by far the hardest job in the world and the most important one. And I want to do everything I can to support a parent being able to parent in from a conscious place, because it's a 24/7 job, and there's sleep deprivation, and they're exhausted, and there are jobs, and, you know, there's so many factors that they're dealing with, and other children, that, and just the necessities, right, of food and shelter. So I don't expect them to sit around and come up with creative, musical, you know, ways to excite their child about reading, or to teach their child empathy or compassion or gratitude. And so if I can be the artist that actually creates that tool, then I would love to be able to make that contribution. I just need parents to want to be willing to incorporate it into their lives, you know, to really embrace it and use it.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, so let me ask you this. How did this whole macaroni and cheese, grateful anthology thing come about? You're sitting around and you're going, you know what we really need. So how did this happen?
Well, let's just be very clear. There's never any sitting around. never in my life has there really been any sitting around. I have a very multidimensional background, and this was a back burner project for a long time. The stories kind of started writing themselves through me about 18, 19 years ago. And I just started writing the stories and not really knowing, you know, what the destination was going to be. And the publishing arm of my company, Ribbonhead, I always wanted to be for children's literature because, again, I was a literacy volunteer, and I absolutely loved children's literature, and I saw how much wisdom was delivered through children's literature, even if it was for adults. So I kind of intended that the publishing arm of my, you know, of Ribbonhead, which is media and publishing and content creation and film and photography and commercials, would be for children's literature. I started seeking out other children's authors and children's illustrators, and it really then became clear to me that I was supposed to be using my own stories. So I started compiling them together, and there were many of them. And I grew up with a wonderful property called Free to Be You and Me. Do you remember Free to Be You and Me? Hello?
It sounds familiar. I'm trying to think, where was that? Free to Be You and Me. Where was that?
It was a book and a record. It was a book and a record, and Marla Thomas was the narrator, and it had a big impact on the kids that were my age range. For many reasons, one of the reasons is it discussed the topics of the time, which were at that time about masculine and feminine in the world. But because it was a book and a record, there were things to read, there were things to listen to, and it was, I think, the variety of stimulus as an artistic and creative child that I loved so much. So I kind of modeled macaroni and cheese after that and created, you know, original music and found fantastic musicians and incredibly talented illustrators. And it just, I continued to give it water, and it grew into, you know, not only written stories, but beautiful artwork and fantastic music that's kind of groovy, bluesy, not very typical kids music. One of the songs is called Attitude of Gratitude, and the other one is called Forget the Rest. And then I have narrated versions, three fantastic narrators that read the story. Again, a big variety in the voices. And I had 20-some-odd stories. So I compiled it. It was suggested to me a long time ago that I break it up into volumes. And I thought that was a great idea. So I broke it up into 6 volumes of three stories each. And each volume will have, you know, 3 stories, 3 songs, 3 activities. There's a whole page of activities in the back of the book that you're looking at. One that goes with each story. So it encourages parents and teachers to, you know, kind of deepen the topic by creating a visceral experience, a play activity with their kids about this. So that's really where it came from, and then it moved from the back burner to the front burner several years ago, and I hired a musical composer and illustrators and found an investor who believed in it, and we moved forward. And I did the first printing, and then we won a Mom's Choice Award, and we won Book of the Year from Creative Child Magazine in the category of self-esteem. And I looked at the business model for publishing, and I really liked the idea, instead of, you know, just putting the book for sale as a retail property, I really wanted to go deliver this content directly to the kids and create, again, an activity, you know, a visceral experience. So when they listen to a live reading and we have an interactive discussion, they're invested. They're, you know, and when they leave the workshops, I've seen in a few schools that I've visited, they're really, I can see that they're activated, because instead of going and playing handball or foursquare on the playground, a couple of these kids will just sit down and crack open the book and start reading out loud to each other. So I know that I'm exciting them about wanting to read. And if they're going to, I mean, obviously kids are going to learn how to read anyway, but if they're going to have literature put in front of them, I would rather give them words and concepts that are going to be awakening these other character-building principles at the same time, right, rather than just reading about an innocuous topic. I'd rather give them something so that they can be honing their reading skills and becoming literate human beings while they're also deepening and tapping into things that are going to make them expansive human beings, right, and conscious human beings.
Right. Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. Stacy, Isabella, Turk, we're out of time, but I just love this program that you're doing. I'm so glad that you took it off the back burner and put it on the front burner, got it out there. Again, you guys can check it out at macaroniandcheeseanthology.com, macaroniandcheeseanthology.com. Stacy, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thanks for having me, Bert.
You bet. Good stuff there. I love this aspect of really making a focus of teaching our children early about gratitude, about the attitude of gratitude. I think it's so necessary in our society today. Good stuff there from Stacy, Isabella, Turk. Shannon Hernandez talking about becoming a thought leader, great strategies there. And last but not least, Mary King today helping you solve your IRS problems. Remember, guys, as always, we appreciate you stopping by. I, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate you stopping by and making us a show that you guys continually listen to and download. Catches on iTunes, catches on iHeartRadio. Check me out on Facebook and on Twitter. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.